I'm going to tell you a story here so that you don't get confused about things. It's a big story because it starts off with God creating all things. Because God loves people, God created, and it's going to lead into all three of the Bible readings that we have today. But it starts off with God creating. He made Adam and Eve, and we know the story about the garden. But when sin came into the world, that is that choice to separate from God, it had an impact on everything. First of all, it struck deep at the heart of the relationship between human beings and God. It just broke that whole trust relationship. The next thing is that enmity entered the relationship between man and woman. You know the story about how it was that they were put out of the garden, enmity was put between them. And so here it is that we've got, not only is our relationship with God not working with one another, our relationship with one another isn't working as well. But it goes on further. It speaks about brothers, but you could say sibling against sibling. Come out of jealousies, out of that desire to be the more accepted or privileged. And it moved on from there to a relationship between heavenly beings and people. You might remember the story about the Nephilim. And so there's a broken relationship there, and that was the impact of that. The sin was the relationship that took place. The judgment on it was the flood, and God's grace at work in it was calling of Noah and the building of the ark. So you can see a pattern of sin, judgment, grace running through it. And that runs through right from the beginning. The sin, once in the garden, they ate of the knowledge of good and evil. That was the sin separating from God once they grabbed that knowledge for themselves. The judgment was they would be expelled from the garden. The grace was they said, how can we live in this world? This world out here. And God gave them the animal skins and things that they might actually survive in it. So that was grace. And that theme of sin, judgment, grace keeps running through until eventually we find that there is nation against nation. And that came at when they were building the great ziggurat, the great tower, you know, the Tower of Babel and places. And what happened as they built that, they started to look and say, we will build this tower and we will get up close to God. Then they looked and said, as they got higher, we will be up with the gods. And then as they got higher, they looked and said, we will be gods. And they got a bit carried away. And God confused their language. That was the judgment on them. And then they dispersed. And the grace movement of God that follows that is the call of Abraham. So Abraham is, you know, the promise that God made, the covenant that God entered into. Here was Abraham, old man, married to Sarah, old, you know, they're both way up in age and everything, past childbearing. God said, you'll have a son, you'll have a child, you'll have offspring, and I will give you a place. You will have a land to live in. And then the third blessing, you know that one, don't you? You should do it. It should be written. Yes. You will be a blessing to the nations. And why is that important to us? Because we're part of the nations. So it's a blessing to us. So this is the path of sin, judgment, grace running through Abraham, blessing to the nations. And then this is where it's like getting, I was just listening to radio the other day and they were talking a little bit about the Super Bowl. Apparently that's happening this weekend, whatever that means. I don't think it's a big punch bowl. Or maybe it is. It's some sort of sporting event in America, I believe, but I've never seen one, So I have no idea. But what happens in amongst all of this is this, these exciting things. You know, like if it was the Dockers, I'm sure you'd all be paying attention. And if you'd missed the game and knew that there were some really fantastic goals taken, you'd be sitting on the replay just waiting in anticipation for it, wouldn't you? Well, this is what we should be doing when we hear these scriptures, because this is what's happening. Here it goes. First of all, you have two things happening. This is the presentation of Jesus. This was 40 days after the presentation in the temple. When God saved people, you remember they went off into exile and God brought them out of the land. When he brought them out of the land, do you remember how they came out? The angel of death went over, and that was when Egypt released them. Well, from that time on, they were given a law that said, your firstborn must be dedicated to the Lord. But then there was also given a way out. So the firstborn, they might have needed, you know, a strong horse or an ox or something, and they could redeem it by offering a lamb in its place. If it was their child, the firstborn son, then they could offer a lamb. And then over in, and that was Exodus 13, in Numbers 18, you find that you could also pay 5 shekels, and that would redeem the child. And so the whole idea was that as they grew up, the child would then look and say, well, hang on, and I am the eldest in my family, was I redeemed? Yes, well, why does it take place? And then the father was supposed to tell the story of how they came out and the importance of being redeemed. So that was what was happening with Jesus. He was being redeemed. The other thing is, it's the purification. Because blood is so, it represents life. It's so precious that any time that blood is lost in that process, there's a kind of purification that goes on and an acknowledgement that you're back after that time. And so there was also the purification of the mother that came out of Leviticus 12. We can read about that. So here they are in the temple, come for these purposes. And this is the echo of the Malachi reading. You've got Mary and Joseph in the temple, and way, way before that, Malachi had told about it, the Lord will appear in his temple. As Malachi 3:1, he said, the Lord whom you seek will suddenly appear. And it goes on to say that when he enters the temple, he will purify the Levites. Now, the Levites were the priestly people. So if Jesus is purifying, what is he doing? What's changing? In those days, what would happen is you would bring an offering in, and it would be a lamb or something, or the shekels, and they would be offered to the temple. And it would either be an animal sacrifice or a monetary sacrifice would come forward. Today we live in a different time because we don't offer that same sacrifice. In fact, if you go into Hebrews, you find, and it's the same readings that you have there, in those readings you find what happens is that Jesus is the high priest. Jesus is the high priest. He's also the perfect, pure offering. And in that process, he has done what we could not do for ourselves. He has become the offering in our place. So that now, how the priesthood is changed is that we don't offer separate animal sacrifices over and over. You read that in other parts of Hebrews. We don't offer the same sacrifices. The sacrifice that we do is the remembrance by breaking the bread. Do this in remembrance of me, breaking the bread and sharing the cup together, remembering Jesus' death on your part and my part. So if we were sitting thinking about, here is the story of God at work in the redemption of people, we'd be sitting on the edge of our seat because we'd know that Malachi told it hundreds of years before, and here's Jesus coming right up and about to fulfill it. He's come right into the temple. But not only that, just in case there's any confusion in amongst it, we've got Malachi telling us before it happens, we've got Hebrews telling us after it happens, and then right in the middle of this event, you have Simeon, who has been given a vision by the Holy Spirit, and he knows deep within himself that he's not going to die until he sees the one who is the consolation of Israel come. And so it is that he walks up and he takes this child. How amazing is this? That God is actually revealing this story. But not only that, not only has he got history writing it way back then, it's told to us in Hebrews so that we've got the picture of how the priesthood has all changed and the reality of it happening when Jesus is there and Simeon turning up or hanging around all of that time. Not only that, you have also Anna there as well. And Anna has been waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem. Now, who would think about a redemption of a city? But it actually means of the people. And we're to be a holy nation. So the priesthood has been redeemed, and that impacts you. Why? Because you are to be a royal priesthood. And we are to do that together. And that's why it's so important for us to gather as the people of God, to worship God, and tell the story of God. And it's one of those things that we should actually be sitting right on the edge of our seat saying, wow! And if you were to drill right down deep into it, you should be able to see yourself in there, that God was doing this for you. Now, when you think of it that way, God is doing all of this. He's got history written. He brings it together. I was trying to think of an image, a way of kind of communicating to you just how it is that God's at work. And I was thinking about, you know, when my kids were really little and they're trying to do that breakout thing, you know, where they rush toward one door. And because they're little, they can't really rush at the same speed that we can. You'd get over and you'd be there blocking their way and they'd think, ah, right. And they'd see the other exit and they bolt for the other exit and you're round and you're standing there and you're right there as well. And you just keep moving ahead of them. Well, I want to tell you that God's way ahead of us. Way ahead of us. And he's worked for your redemption. I think this whole presentation, you know, we think the presentation of Jesus, yeah, a nice ceremony that they've put together, but it actually brings this whole story right down in to a place and holds it that is actually speaking to us. I think it's just amazing the way God keeps speaking through these different ways to tell us that we're precious to God, that you are precious to God. And just as I've said to the children, the greatest thing that we can take hold of is that we're precious for who we are. One of my favorite sayings to teenagers is when I'm talking to them about what will you do with your life? What are you planning for your life? Where do you want to be in your life? Because you need to have a goal and you need to be working for it. And it's best to do something. Don't look to say what pays really well. You look and say, what are the things that I enjoy most and how does that integrate with the world? How can I use the things that I enjoy, or do I need to look at some other things to see if I can find where I find my joys in it so that I can do something I really like to do? And here's the line. Because it's better to be unemployed at something you love doing than it is to be unemployed at something you don't like doing. Why do I say that? Well, going back 30 years ago now, when we were taking apprentices on, we would have place for 6 apprentices. And we had over 400 applicants. Do you think in 400 people there weren't more than 6 that could really do that well, that were all very worthy of the job? Of course there were. It wasn't about them. It's really about you can only take so many in and you have to make a decision on it. So when you get rejected about something, it often isn't about you. It's really just about the system. And our system needs reworking so that it's got a place for everyone, because that is the Christian message, isn't it? We all are valuable for who we are, and it's up to us all to step back a little bit and make space. Let everyone have a go. We really should. And I'd like to see our nation get back to training apprentices, to providing places, because not everyone learns academically. We need to be doing those things. But this is about the redemption of our world as it stands as well. There are things that we can do. And hopefully, please, God will be led to that. But while we operate out of that need for greed that just keeps getting pushed at us, we'll lose our way. So I hope that in amongst all of this, as you see how God is writing his story for you, that you also will help to write it, part of it for our children, and help them to know that they're precious. The Lord be with you.